We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Good morning, happy Sunday. It is Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Joe Beamer and Brenda Alacy with you for the next 2 hours. And as always, we have a packed show getting you up to date on what's happened this week, what may happen next week in the world of politics or in the world of things that have been affected by politics. The lights just flickered here in the studio, Brenda, so hopefully we'll stay on the air for the next 2 hours.
Oh, well, that would be delightful, Joe, since we have a really power-packed show with three guests lined up and your calls and texts. In the first half hour, we'll talk with Robbie Raw, who is, well, let me tell you, I could probably take 10 minutes just giving you her credentials, but she is an author and motivational health and fitness speaker, an integrative nutritionist, and also a Catalyst fitness instructor. And Robbie's been in the business for more than 4 decades, so has a unique perspective on what's happening with the gyms, finally given the green light to reopen tomorrow, August 24th. And then later we'll talk with State Senator Rob Ort, and he'll fill us in on what's happening as the minority leader and all sorts of issues churning in Albany. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll talk with Jeremy Zellner, who is the Erie County Democratic Chair and Board of Elections Commissioner. So we'll get his perspective on things happening. And of course, Joe, we'll fit in some calls and texts as well.
Exactly. That last half hour will be for, well, you and I to give our opinion and the listeners. But hey, Brenda, let's start with what I've been looking forward to, going to the gym. Finally, we can do that starting at 5 a.m. tomorrow. And here to talk about it is Robbie Raw. Robbie, good morning.
Good morning, Joe and Brenda. Thanks so much for having me on. And Joe, I think I've seen you in the gym.
You sure have. I usually stick by the cardio machines. I'm a huge fan of the elliptical, the bike, and the Stairmaster.
Yes, I know. And Brenda has actually taken my classes, so I'm talking to two people who know what I'm doing.
You know,
Robbie, and Joe was the guy that was peering into the window, pounding on the door, saying, open the gym, for the last 2 months.
Yeah, well, a lot of other people too, and I couldn't be more ecstatic that it's opening tomorrow. And I mean, honestly, as a clinician, as a registered nurse as well, you know, I've been dealing for the past 5 months with patients, my own patients, who I'm trying to help prevent COVID, and also some who have, you know, recovering from it. So I'm looking at both sides of the spectrum here. Not only am I trying to help people prevent and recover from COVID, but I'm also in the fitness industry. Obviously, I realize the gravity of it all. It's, you know, COVID's real. It's nothing to joke about. I'm actually in New York City right now. So I'm taking a lot of precautions, you know, everywhere I go. But I do understand and appreciate the fact that we are finally getting some attention in the fitness industry, because it could not be more important than right now to focus on our health. And we know that exercise increases our lymphatic circulation and helps boost the immune system. So why did it take so long for us to open?
Well, that was my question to you, Robbie. What did you hear? I mean, you work for Catalyst, and I know Amy Buemi, who is the owner, she and her husband have been all over our airwaves and all over the media. Mm-hmm. What did you hear about the ventilation system and masks and so forth? Tell us your thoughts on the guidelines, I guess I'm asking you about, for the gyms that are finally reopening.
Well, I can just tell you from the start, we have said that we will do whatever it takes to open. just like every other industry, just like the restaurant industry and every other industry, we will do whatever it takes to keep our clients, to keep our members safe and healthy. And we were not given the chance to do that. I know that Joe and Amy for the past, you know, few months have been working at, for the past 5 months, they have been working and talking with other gym owners across the U.S. on what's working, what doesn't work, what the guidelines are, what they can do, and they are set to go. They have had their staff in, you know, cleaning the clubs and making sure that everything is up to par, including, you know, the air conditioning. Whatever they have to do, they're following the guidelines. I was just with Amy last weekend, you know, for a workout. And so I know that they are willing and able, just like they have with every other topic. I mean, they, you know, and I believe that all of the gym members, it's not just Catalyst Fitness. I know many of the gym, you know, owners in this area, and they are all working hard to make sure that the guidelines are being met.
Robbie, I know that Amy held an outdoor press conference of sorts where all of you employees and a number of other people gathered at the new Maple Road facility. What was the tone of that meeting?
You know, it was very interesting, actually, Brenda. Great question. It was something that, first of all, other gym owners were there, which was great, and we welcomed them. We appreciated them coming, and we said thank you for coming. It was a serious tone. I mean, the members that were there, the staff that were there, I mean, many of us, I cried when I walked into the club because it's just such an emotional thing. You know, I've always said that exercise is important both physically and mentally. And so mentally, I'm a psychiatric nurse by trade, so mentally I understand the importance of it as well. But it was a very serious tone. I thought Amy did a fantastic job, as some of the other gym owners spoke to. They all did a fantastic job in just expressing the fact that we need the gyms to open. Of course, at that press conference, we didn't know what was around the corner that we were actually going to be opening tomorrow. But we were just, you know, stating the facts that we need to open, and we were all expressing how important it is for our health. We've sort of gotten used to calling gyms gyms over the last few years. And what I said in that press conference is I have always called the gym a health club. I mean, listen, I started working out in 1974. Don't start doing the math. But listen, you know, that we called it a health club back then, European Health Club, if some of you remember that. It is for your health. It's not under the category of recreation. I mean, golfing to me is recreation. Working out in a gym, it's a health club. It's for health reasons. And so that's what my message was. And I said also in that press conference, if we don't open pretty soon, we are going to have a second wave, because there's a lot of people who stopped working out because the gym's closed.
100%, Robbie. You know, you say it's physical and mental. And it's funny, before the show, Brenda and I were talking about, you know, how I miss my routine. And part of my routine was 90 minutes at the gym, and yeah, I had the physical of it, but also the mental. That's my time I would zone out, kind of, and have a little bit of time to myself, and I'm really looking forward to getting back to that. Now, tomorrow, after David Bellavia's show, when I walk to the gym, what is going to look different than the last time I've been at the gym?
Well, you know, I've been out of town for the last couple days, so I haven't been there, but I know that the last time I was there, we had the Group X studio all marked off, you know, 6 feet apart. I know that they were, you know, moving equipment, doing whatever they could. Of course, I know that they will be doing temperature checks and, you know, the masks will be in place. And as employees, we all said we will do whatever it takes to make it happen. You know, I know that they are following the guidelines 100%.
Robbie, have you worked out with a mask yet?
I have. I have actually walked and ran my dog with a mask on. And here in New York, we've been doing that. You know, it's kind of interesting, because I wondered how many people in New York were actually going to be having masks on. But there's quite a few. I mean, I've seen very few people without masks here. So we've been walking, we've been running the beach. Yesterday the beach was packed, but it was, you know, people were trying to stay keep their distance, but it was hard. But a lot of people had their masks on, even at the beach.
Yeah, this week I was doing my workouts with the mask on, and let me tell you, it's possible. You can do it. You can get through it. You get used to it after a while. Now, with masks on, does that mean no water breaks inside the gym?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I mean, I take water breaks, but I don't know exactly. I haven't been, you know, behind the scenes in that respect in terms of the water in the last couple of days. But I can tell you this, Joe, that I didn't feel, you know, I have asthma. So, I mean, you know, with the mask situation, I was a little bit concerned. And so the last couple of days, I was able to breathe fine with it. And I think it depends on the type of mask that you're wearing. And obviously, there's ways to test the mask that you have on, even as simple as blowing out a candle with your mask on to see whether or not that mask is you know, the right mask and doing its job. But in terms of the water, I am not sure how they're going to work on that. I don't believe the water fountains will be an option, but I don't know about your own water bottle because I haven't been there for the last couple of days.
Robbie, having taken your classes many, many times over the years, let me tell you, what a workout. And there's a lot of sweat and, you know, there's always, you know, body fluids that you're kind of expelling as part of a good workout. Had there been any talk to do outdoor classes since the weather has been so wonderful this summer? Was that an option at all, especially in a class like yours that was, you know, I try to sort of scope out a little area where I could get in there and get my corner of the gym because your classes were always jam-packed. Since you're in this new location, and obviously the other locations have large parking lots too, was there any talk about holding your classes or other instructors' classes outside?
Yes, Brenda, we have been doing that actually, and I know a lot of other gyms have as well, but definitely Catalyst has been doing that. I chose to do my classes on Zoom. I've been doing it on Zoom since day one, so this is like week 23 or 24. And so Catalyst has been having a lot of instructors teach outside. They asked me to teach outside, but I prefer to kind of do Zoom. I mean, I'm doing AM Buffalo from my living room. I'm doing podcasts from my living room. I'm doing my show from my living room, and I'm also doing Zoom. So for me, I can also take care of my dog and make lunch with my daughter, you know, have lunch with my daughter. So for me, I just wanted to, you know, continue to do everything in the house until I could go back inside the gym. It's just more convenient for me. But yes, absolutely. We have been doing classes outside all, I think, over the last couple of months, for sure.
Yeah, and to recap it, the gym guidelines that were set forth by the governor, 33% capacity, masks required at all times, and their HVAC ventilation systems have to comply with the state regulations. Robbie, it'll be a brand new way to do business. And before you go, just what do you consider to be the benefits of exercise on the immune system, in particular to prevent COVID?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, let me just comment on your point of 33%. Fortunately, our clubs are really big. 33% means a lot of people still, you know, able to take Group X classes and do exercise in the gyms that have a lot of room. The gyms that don't have a lot of room, it's a little bit more of a problem. But to answer your question, exercise to me, as a clinician, as a nurse, as someone who's been in the industry for 40 years, it could not be more important. Brenda, you and I both have to help prevent, you know, cancer, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. Joe, you too. I just mentioned Brenda because I know that we both are advocates of making sure that we are supporting our health because we are at risk for breast cancer, and we've talked about that on the air before. But I'll tell you, the thing is inflammation. Inflammation in our body is a problem, especially with COVID. And so my job, you know, in terms of, you know, making sure that people are having an anti-inflammatory diet and boosting their immune system and also increasing their lymphatic circulation through exercise, it could not be a more important time for all of us, you know, making sure that we have supplementation and vitamin D, C, A, zinc, fish oil, which all help with inflammation and avoiding inflammation. But exercise not only helps to boost our lymphatic circulation, which boosts our immune system, it gives us a sense of well-being. And let's not forget obesity. It helps us to prevent obesity because obesity is a risk factor. I mean, talk about COVID, talk about obesity. There's more people dying right now in terms of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, some cancers, all related to obesity. And so exercise helps us to prevent obesity. And so that's why I exercise. Brenda, I know you, and that's, you know, a lot of your motivation too. And it needs to be everyone's motivation because if we, I mean, you know how deep my faith is. And I believe that none of us are promised tomorrow. But we all have to do our part. We all have to take responsibility. And yes, God knows the day and the hour, but we all need to take responsibility in taking care of this body that God gave us. And it's you know, for me, I don't wake up and say, I can't wait to exercise. I wake up and say, I can't wait to live. And that's what we need to do. Why we're here, we need to live our life. And that's why I've been frustrated with the gyms being closed, because it's so important to take care of this temporary earth suit, this temporary mobile home that I call it, because we have a responsibility to do that. And we will help to not only prevent COVID, but, you know, as I've been working with my patients that got COVID, and I know a lot of people who have gotten COVID, I know people who have died with COVID. So it's no joke. I'm taking precautions as a nurse as well. And, you know, as a human, I want to help others to prevent it. It's no joke. But I do believe that, you know, over the last 5 months, we have not taken seriously what we need to do in preventing COVID and all of the other things that I mentioned, and obesity, which is a total risk factor.
Robbie, did you have any concern, having had asthma for a number of years, about going down to New York City? You mentioned you're in the New York area right now, because there were a lot of reports about how there are a lot of folks who are not practicing social distancing, wearing masks, doing all the safety things. Did you have any concern about, you know, going into an area like that?
You know, it's to me, I don't consider it as a concern. I consider it as an opportunity for me to practice what I'm supposed to be practicing everywhere I go, which is hand washing and, you know, wearing my mask if I'm closer than 6 feet apart. I obviously have a higher risk factor because of my age. I have a higher risk factor because I have asthma. And, you know, there are environmental factors that come into play too, you know, like pollution, for instance, which can trigger an asthma attack for me. And I felt it actually as we were walking down the street here yesterday. I felt like, I said to my husband, wow, you know, I feel like my chest is heavy. I mean, I had my mask on, but there was a lot of pollution and I could feel it. And so there are environmental factors that come into play too. And so there are a lot of things that I don't think people think about. But the guidelines are in place for a reason. And, you know, for people who kind of poo-poo them, they shouldn't, really. I think that, you know that my daughter is a doctor here in ICU in New York City. So, you know, I know the gravity of it. COVID is real. It's real to the people who get it. It's real to the people who have a risk factor for it. It's just the guidelines that have frustrated me over the months, because I think that we need to live our life, but we also need, you know, to remember that it's not a joke. We need to take precautions.
Robbie, well said. And I have to say what you said before that, you know, 7 years ago, I was 100 pounds overweight, probably over 100 pounds overweight, with high blood pressure and all that bad stuff. And all I did was clean up my diet and started going to this thing called a gym for 6 days a week. And it really turns your life around. You're not tired all the time. You can fit into your clothes. And you're healthier. Like, I was on lisinopril when I was 19. I'm 32 now and not on high blood pressure medication. So it is really important to get that physical activity in.
Absolutely. And congratulations. But, you know, a healthy lifestyle, eating healthy and exercising, will change your life. It will change your health. And, you know, you will spend the time and the money either way. You'll either spend the time and the money in healthcare, like gym, exercise, supplementation, healthy eating, or you'll spend the time and the money in sick care, which is better for you.
100%. Robbie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brenda and Joe. God bless you guys. Have a great day.
We'll see you at the gym.
Great to have you on. Yeah, see you at the gym, finally.
All right, Brenda, coming up, we'll change focus. We'll go to Albany, talk to Rob Ort. A whole bunch of things we want to talk about with Senator Ort, and we will do that after this break and news here on News Radio 930 W.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
BEN. Welcome back to Hardline here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Joe Beamer and Brenda Alacy with you. And joining us for this half hour is Minority Leader Senator Rob Ort. Senator Ort, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to get right off to what happened last week when Governor Cuomo was speaking to the DNC. Do you think Governor Cuomo is in a position to talk about how good the state has been with coronavirus?
No, I don't. And I think it's been really interesting to see. You know, we still have 15% of the total deaths have occurred in New York. We are well aware of the nursing home disaster and the 6,200, probably closer to 12,000 deaths that have occurred in nursing homes as a direct result of both the order from the governor of March 25th directing nursing homes to accept COVID-positive patients, which no other governor did, and the lack of accountability as a result of that. And yet, in spite of that, now he has a book that he's writing. That's the really most galling part, I think, for a lot of people, that you would take time to write a memoir or direct someone to write a memoir in the middle of the pandemic, right? I mean, all we've heard, including from Governor Cuomo, is this isn't over. There could be another wave. You know, we still have to stay vigilant. And yet he took time to write a memoir about how great his leadership was. So clearly, you know, this is politics. I think everyone understands that, but I do not think for a second that the governor should be doing a victory lap looking at New York's numbers, and especially not knowing what's going to happen in the future.
Senator Ort, I imagine you weren't a big fan of Governor Cuomo traveling to Savannah for 23 hours, as he put it. Do you think that's sort of that same way of thinking that, hey, I'm going to go down there, tell them how to handle this crisis, I'm going to come back to New York, I'm going to hold more updates and briefings, and then I'm going to write a book? I mean, do you see it all as part of a bigger, almost PR campaign on his behalf?
Look, the book should be, certainly from a PR standpoint, because you look at the numbers and the substance, and yet you look at, you know, some of his poll numbers and how he's viewed, you know, outside of New York, and it's sort of head-scratching. But I think that when you look at his handling of this crisis, all the different executive orders, it has definitely been a do as I say, not as I do kind. I mean, just today I was reading this morning in the New York Post that, you know, Hollywood stars, people coming in for the VMAs, they are not going to be subject to the quarantine rules that other people coming to New York would be. So, you know, you'd have to ask yourself, what makes these folks so special that you and I would not, we, you know, we would have to come here in quarantine or we wouldn't be able to do the trip, but they're going to come in for one night and out they go. So this has been political from the get-go. The executive orders have not been consistent. And the longer this has gone on and these inconsistencies and this, you know, sort of, I can do what I want. I got a tan. I'm getting a haircut. I'm traveling to other places that no one else is supposed to travel to, but you all can't. And you can't open your restaurants, or you can't open your restaurants unless I say so, and people are eating a certain thing, and you can't dance with your father at your wedding. I mean, it just at some point becomes really, really, I think, incredulous for a lot of people, and just an absolute embarrassment, I believe. And especially when you have a guy, look, if you're going to put all these crazy rules in place, then you got to live by them too. And that's the part, the minute you don't, then I think you just, it undercuts the integrity of all of these orders that are coming out.
It's interesting you bring up about the quarantine example, because my family and I experienced it this week. We have an elderly friend who flew in from L.A., and is reestablishing her residence at a senior community in North Tonawanda. And she has to quarantine for 2 weeks. So it's very cumbersome for her. It's difficult for all of us trying to help her. It's expensive because she's staying at a place that, at a local hotel that, you know, requires payment up front. There's all sorts of complications and issues involved in these situations. And it's absolutely infuriating to think that it's good for some, but not for others. As a leader, Senator, is there anything you can do about this?
So we have actually on two occasions, the Senate Republicans and the Assembly Republicans, to be fair, on two separate occasions since I believe it was either April or May, we were back in Albany, and on both occasions, within 30 to 45 days, introduced resolutions that would have rescinded the governor's emergency powers. So it would have rescinded his ability to, you know, make these rules all by executive order. You know, he would have to go through the legislative process, or he would be restricted within the current confines of the Constitution as far as the powers he has, which, by the way, are still pretty broad. But it would rescind those. On both occasions, Senate and Assembly Democrats voted against the resolution to rescind the governor's powers. In the 6 months this has gone on, the majorities in both houses, the Democrats in both houses, they have not found, apparently, one executive order that they take issue with. Because if they did, they have the ability, in the original order that granted him these broad powers, they have the ability, we have the ability, to rescind either the total powers in general, or we can actually pick individual executive orders, and they have not had the political will to do either. So the Senate Republicans have tried. I wish we had more Republicans for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is we would then be able to at least pass this in the Senate. But with the current majorities that the Democrats have, all the Senate Republicans can do is try to bring these resolutions to the floor. The majorities have to ultimately vote. The whole House has to vote, but they have the numbers. So they rejected on two occasions, and New Yorkers should know this, they rejected on two occasions the ability to rescind these broad powers, and that's why we continue in this, you know, in the current situation that we're in.
You mentioned nursing homes a moment ago, and whenever that issue is discussed about Governor Cuomo, whether it's on a state level or a national level, people often talk about how he was following federal guidelines. In other words, taking him off the hook for what many view as a very dangerous thing he did by allowing people to return to nursing homes during the era of COVID-19. How do you respond to the fact that some say, well, it was just him following federal guidelines?
Well, I think it's really, you know, it's only interesting, again, in the standpoint that, first of all, show me another governor that issued an order, that actually issued a proactive order that said, nursing homes, you have to take COVID-positive patients. That's first of all. Second of all, show me another state that had the number of beds that were sent to New York, whether it was the USS Comfort, whether it was all the beds that were built down at the Javits Center. Show me, you know, any other state that had that kind of infrastructure provided by, in large part, the federal government that went unused. We didn't use those beds. We didn't. We could have used those beds. We didn't. We sent those folks to nursing homes. And then thirdly, show me, you know, how many instances in this pandemic has the governor said, well, I'm not going to listen to the president. He's not doing enough. I'm not going to follow. We're going to go further than the federal government. And then on the one thing that goes wrong or that has been a problem for him politically, he blames the federal government. So, you know, you sort of can't pick and choose. Either the federal government's doing a good job and you're following their lead or you're not. And so I just think it's ironic that in this one instance, he tries to hang even his own mistake rather than take accountability. You might remember early on in this pandemic, he said at one of his press conferences, look, if you're unhappy with an order or if something goes wrong, blame me. I mean, he said that. Blame me. I'm the guy. I'm the governor. I'm the one making these decisions. Well, apparently he only meant that for that press conference, because in this situation regarding nursing homes, he has been blamed. We have tried to blame him. We had tried to get accountability and to get answers so we know what to do going forward, because that's what this is really about. This is not only about getting answers for the families who lost loved ones, getting answers for the workers in those facilities, but also getting answers for people who have loved ones still in these facilities into the fall, into the winter, not knowing what's going to happen. We don't have any of those answers. To me, it's a little dishonest, a little disingenuous when the governor blames the federal government when things go wrong in New York, but when things go right, it's all him, thank God, and it's nobody else. So, you know, I think people can see that for what it is.
I know that there was an investigation that was rejected by the governor August 10th, and then there was another one called for. Have you had any Democrat support in Albany for an investigation into what happened with the nursing homes?
We have. Amazingly, we actually have. There's several Assembly Democrats and even some Senate Democrats who have expressed either tacitly or you know, openly expressed support for an independent investigation. There is a bill sponsored by Senator Jim Tedisco from the Capital Region, and the Assembly sponsor is a Democrat from New York City. Even the chair of the Health Committee in the Assembly, Senator Gottfried, who's a Democrat, a very liberal Democrat, but he's expressed support for an independent investigation. The funny part is the both houses have the ability. They have subpoena power. They could have simply subpoenaed Commissioner Howard Zucker 2 weeks ago. They have that ability. They chose not to use the subpoena power to compel the information that we're looking for. So that should really, I support an independent investigation because I think we need answers, but it's really a shame, and people should understand we have that ability. We don't need an outside group. The legislature is there to provide oversight in New York State, just like it is in Washington, D.C. It's simply the fact that the majority parties in both houses, when the moment came, when we had these hearings, when Commissioner Zucker was going to be there, we chose, you know, not to use our full power as a legislature and subpoena testimony for the information we were looking for. And then in the second hearing, the upstate hearing, the commissioner totally blew us off and didn't even show up. So, yes, I support an investigation. Yes, there have been Democrats that have expressed support as well, Joe, but the leadership in both the Assembly and the Senate, the Democratic leadership, apparently does not share that desire.
Is there a... I'm sorry, Brenda. Is there a way for an independent investigation into this to happen that the governor couldn't reject or can't have his hands on? Is there a way to do that?
Yeah, it would probably require a federal, at this point, a federal investigation. I know people like Congressman Steve Scalise and including Congressman Tom Reed have expressed support for such an investigation. CMS has oversight because these facilities in New York State get money from the federal government, to support both these patients and these facilities. And so that, you know, CMS would have jurisdiction, if you would, or oversight to my knowledge at this point. I don't know where that is, if those have gone beyond the discussion phase. But that to me would be the only way or the most assured way to get an investigation that the governor or his administration would not be able to interfere with or block.
State Senator Rob Ord is with us. He is the minority leader, and he represents the 62nd Senate District here in New York State. Senator, you're one of 63 senators in the state, but I know you stay in close contact with local leaders as well. And a couple of weeks ago, I had Ed Rath on the show. Joe was off that weekend proposing to his now fiance. And when Ed Rath joined us, we talked about bail reform, and it really seemed to strike a nerve with our listeners. Is there anything being done about this bail reform issue?
Before we get into that, first of all, I'd like to congratulate Joe on taking the plunge, so good for him, and I wish him a lot of luck. As far as the bail reform, so this was passed last year, very contentious bill. It was passed, I believe, maybe even as part of the budget, if I'm not mistaken. And to my knowledge, every Senate Democrat voted for it. And our conference, the Republican conference, I was not the leader then, but our conference spoke vehemently against this and basically said this was going to result in increased crime and increased violent crime. And it was going to make our communities less safe. And by the Senate Democrats' own admission, they said that, you know, according to this law, 90% of arrests will be non-bailable, will not have any bail attached to them, would not be eligible for bail. 90%. So that includes robbery, includes some assaults, it includes some violent offenses, at least as most people would define them. Since that time, you have seen exactly what Senate Republicans said would happen. You look at New York City today, and the increase in crime there, in violent crime. You look at, you know, even here in the city of Buffalo, the uptick in crime in Rochester, in Syracuse. It's across the state of New York. That is not an accident. It is not the coronavirus pandemic. This is directly the result of Democrat policies. And then, of course, they've gone further and put more restrictions and gone after, made it harder to be a police officer and to do your job as a police officer. And now they're talking about defunding police departments, including the city of New York's police department. So at a time when crime is at an all-time high or going up, when more criminals are out on the street, they want to cut back on the very people who they would call on to protect our largest cities here in New York. So, again, much like we are, you know, in the current situation, to get a change to that law, you would need a majority of both houses to pass a change. Currently, the Senate Democrats and the Assembly Democrats, I don't see them supporting a change to that law. This was one of the first things they did when they had full control of both houses of the legislature. And it was a party line vote. They all voted for it. So I can't really, you know, I can't stomach any, if there's a Democrat in the Assembly or the Senate that says, well, you know, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, or we want to see the results. Let's see what happens. They're just being disingenuous, or they're incompetent enough that they shouldn't be in public office, because everyone that opposed this bill said that what was going to happen is exactly what's happening. So this law is working exactly the way it was intended to work. And people, again, across this state, Western New York, should know that. They should know how their representatives voted on that bill, because that is a bill that is a major change in our criminal justice system that absolutely will result in our communities, especially our large cities, being less safe for tourists, less safe for business, and less safe for people and families who live there.
Yeah, Senator, you know, I watched the DNC last week, and no mention, obviously, of what's going on in the streets of New York City or other cities around. And I wonder, maybe off camera, behind the scenes, because is anyone from the Democrat Party in New York State talking like, hey, maybe we need to, you know, maybe we need to get stricter on this bill, you know, defunding the police, that's a bad look. Is any of that coming from the other side in Albany?
You know, I gotta believe there are those who privately, as you said, recognize that this is, first of all, this has to be, you know, I'm hoping bad politically. We can't have reached a point where most New Yorkers think that getting rid of police departments or reducing their police departments at this current time, at the same time that we're essentially releasing more violent offenders or more dangerous offenders back onto the streets is a good thing. But I also believe that there has to be hopefully some Democrats who believe this is just bad policy and that it makes communities less safe. And especially when you the communities I'm talking about, many of them, they're represented by Democrats almost completely. You know, you talk about the largest cities in New York State, almost exclusively, it's Democrat control. Whether it's New York, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, it's almost all Democratic control in those places. Unfortunately, I think what's happened is their party is increasingly being taken over by, you know, a radical left wing of the Democratic Party, but that's becoming more the mainstream. Just this past June, several Assembly Democrats lost primaries. These were all liberal Democrats. They lost primaries to further left candidates out of the AOC mold, out of the squad mold, who believe that the police are, you know, part of a systemic racism, that they are part of a systemic brutality against people of color, and the only solution is to get rid of them or to reduce the amount of police officers in these places. And I think that is an incredibly dangerous policy. And again, you're talking about, to me, a ruinous, whether you like New York City or not, whether you like their politics or not, New York City at one time in my lifetime was the greatest city in America, in the world. It was the safest big city, certainly in the country. It is no longer that way today for a variety of reasons. And again, who runs New York City? Bill de Blasio, total Democratic control. So I don't know where those Democrats are, Joe. I think they're going to have to start speaking up on camera, not just behind the scenes. I know they're afraid of primaries, but this we are talking about policies that are really dangerous for New York and for this country.
State Senator Rob Ort, Minority Leader as well. Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Thank you guys very much for having me, and I look forward to being on again.
Much more to come on Hardlight in the next hour. Jeremy Zellner joins us, and your calls as well, 803-0930, back after this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.